Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Dean Welty with Rita Dunaway, and we'll be talking today about our deep and growing concern for the state of liberty in America today, with a special focus on our religious liberties. Now, this whole issue of religious liberty often exposes tensions between church and state, between church and culture, but especially on hot-button moral issues, such as protecting the sanctity of life, the natural marriage as God has designed it between only one man and one woman, and the whole general topic of moral virtue. Now, that takes us into a whole new arena in which men, now listen to this, because 10 years ago you wouldn't have believed that I'm saying this, in which men are allowed to use women's restrooms and locker room facilities according to their preferred sexual identity as a woman on any particular day, regardless of their male gender at birth. I almost feel like I need to repeat it because it's so unbelievable. But as a result of all this, there is an aggressive effort to intimidate and to silence Christians and to prevent them from acting according to their deeply held religious beliefs, especially on these issues of life, marriage, and sex. Now, in fact, one study conducted by First Liberty showed that published attacks on Christians have doubled over the past 2 years. The Supreme Court decision to legalize same-sex marriage has certainly contributed to this increase, and it will continue to do so. But if they succeed in trying to silence the Christian community, we will have what has been referred to as a naked public square where there is no free exercise of religion and anything goes. That leads to chaos, and chaos invites tyranny. We must not let that happen. In fact, according to a former Speaker of the House of Representatives, Robert Winthrop, over 100 years ago said, "Men must necessarily be controlled either by a power within them or by a power outside of them, either by the word of God or by the strong arm of man, either by the Bible or by the bayonet." And that, I believe, is the path that we're taking today. Therefore, Rita and I are going to focus today on five areas in which these attacks are taking place. The public square, number one, the schoolhouse, number two, churches and Christian ministries, number three, businesses, number four, and number five, and the last one, is in the military. Now, we're going to review some of the cases that we talked about last year and give you an update on them, but we're also going to add some newer cases that we have never discussed with you before. In fact, several of them have broken out just within the last week. But in addition to that, we're going to drill down. I'm going to say Rita is going to drill down to find out who is leading these attacks, why they're doing it, who is defending us, and most importantly, what can we do to help? Rita, maybe you could just set the stage by talking about the misguided notion of separation of church and state and how it's been abused to pursue this agenda.
Well, I'm concerned that perhaps our audience has grown weary of hearing me talk about this idea of separation of church and state, but it does bear repeating because there may be new listeners out there. So the Constitution does not mandate the separation of church and state. It does not mandate a nation free from any reference to God or Christianity. In fact, that would be completely contrary to our heritage and our founding history. What the First Amendment does is to forbid the establishment of a national religion. Unfortunately, as we're going to hear about today, that provision has been stretched and perverted by the courts over time, and it has resulted in confusion and disaster.
Well, Rita, there's a long history to what's going on today. But much of it has happened just in the last 50 years, going back to the early 60s, when the Bible and prayer were taken out of the public schools. As I said earlier, these attacks have increased steadily since that time, but they've shot up like a rocket in the past 8 years of the Obama presidency. And that's where we're going to focus most of our attention, and we're going to start with the public square. I'm just going to identify several instances where the Christian evidences and displays have been under attack. Let's start with monuments and crosses. In the Mojave Desert, a World War I Veterans War Memorial was under attack by the ACLU. Fortunately, the Supreme Court overruled the earlier decisions, and yes, that cross can remain as it is because the land has been transferred from the government property to the veterans of foreign wars. That's the way they were able to escape this attempt.
So the final result was good, but the implication is troubling.
The implication is troubling that you can't have these displays on public property. Right. There was a similar one in Mount Soledad in San Diego. There was a 25-year-long legal battle that has just ended. Again, the sale of land gave the land to a private veterans association, and therefore it no longer sits on government property. Again, it did not address the real issue. Mm-hmm. And finally, there's a Bladensburg Memorial in Maryland. Erected in 1925, the district court ruled that it was constitutional. Well, that didn't hold well with the American Humanist Association. They appealed, and it is now under appeal before the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. So we don't know where that's going to end up. Let's go on to civil servants. If you are a civil servant, whether at the state level, the local level, the federal level, here's what could happen. The example of Kelvin Cochran. He was the Atlanta fire chief who was fired for private remarks in which he expressed biblical views on homosexuality. And he was fired from his position. This is in Atlanta, Georgia.
So that, of course, has all kinds of implications for the Bill of Rights. You know, free speech. Where's his free speech? Where is his freedom of religious expression? Does a person lose those fundamental rights by virtue of taking a job with the government?
Hold that question.
Okay.
I'm going to get to it because there are very clear statements on the part of Obama administration officials where it says gay rights trump religious rights. We'll expand on that in a minute. There's another example, Eric Walsh. He was in California. He applied for a job in Georgia as their public health director. He was hired. But then somebody said, well, you better look at some of the sermons he's preached, in which he too, like Kelvin Cochran, expressed biblical opposition to extramarital sexual relations, including homosexuality. He was fired almost before he was ever able to take his
position. So now we have the government digging back into a person's history to see what they have said in the past in a church sermon.
In a church sermon. This is getting outrageous. Yeah. We all know the case of Kim Davis, clerk of the court in Rowan County, Kentucky. She was jailed because she refused to sign same-sex marriage certificates, released after 6 days, and hallelujah, finally, common sense came to the good folks in Kentucky, and all charges against her have been dropped, but after a lengthy legal appeal. That's Kim Davis. And this is a new one, Rita. An Oregon Circuit Court judge named Vance Day faces removal from the bench in part because of his refusal to officiate at same-sex weddings. So there you go. That is civil servants under attack for their beliefs. Now, we finally have one more category.
We're still in the public square, right?
Well,
yeah,
actually,
public square.
Yes, we are, but this is a subcategory. And this has just exploded in the last week. Sporting and cultural events.
Oh, boy.
The NCAA, this has just been on the news, has just announced that it has pulled 7 athletic championship events from North Carolina because they have a state law that they claim discriminates against LGBT people. Now, that law, known as HB2, was passed by the state legislature earlier this year that simply requires all people to use restrooms in schools and government buildings that correspond to the sex on their birth certificates.
Wow.
Doesn't say anything about private businesses. They can do as they like. Mm-hmm. It only addressed government property, schools and government buildings. Okay, now that's the NCAA ban, but there's more to it. That includes basketball, baseball, soccer, tennis, lacrosse championship tournaments throughout the state. And that adds to what the NBA did several months ago when they moved their 2017 scheduled All-Star game from Charlotte, North Carolina to New Orleans. So there we're getting into the sporting arena. One final example. Several entertainers have also canceled events that were to be held in North Carolina. PayPal canceled plans to open a new 400-employee operations center there. In addition, five states and several cities have reportedly prohibited travel to North Carolina by their employees and representatives of public institutions. What I would like to know is whether the NCAA, what kind of restrooms they have in other sporting facilities where they have events. Mm-hmm. Are they requiring every venue to have gender-neutral restrooms? No, they are targeting North Carolina. They want their scalp, and they want to make an example.
Here's what I want to say about that. I think it's important for us to see the distinction here. The first list of cases and instances you described dealt with the violation of religious freedom and even just free expression by the government.
Yes.
It was the government doing something to punish people for their religious freedom.
Yes.
And their
Yes.
freedom of expression. This second case that you're talking about with North Carolina involves the government crafting a good common
Yes.
sense policy, a good wise policy. And then what we see here is the culture and society pressuring them the other way and punishing them for what is a good and decent policy. And so what I want to say about this to our listeners, Dean, is that we must speak out. We must be just as active in supporting these good government policies as the other side is in trying to punish governments when they enact good, wise policies.
Well, boycotts is one example. We've already known of the case of Target, which has opened up sort of gender-neutral restrooms. And people are boycotting Target. As a result, their sales have dropped.
And Target responded by doing it sort of a scale back and change of their policy. And I was very excited about that. It was great for me to share with my family that when Christians speak with
yes.
their pocketbooks,
yes.
there will be a response.
I want to say one more thing about North Carolina. You mentioned government and the private sector. The government, as we should mention, threatened to sue North Carolina if they didn't implement these school restroom policies. So there you have the federal government getting in cahoots with big business and with sporting events.
Mm.
Now, Rita, we've talked about that, but let's go on now to the second arena, the schoolhouse.
Yes.
I know you've had some experience and you have some cases that you'd like to talk about.
Yeah, I do want to turn to the schoolhouse because, as our listeners probably know, the schoolhouse has long been a major battleground over religious freedom and freedom of expression. And, you know, it's really unfortunate because really the schoolhouse should be the place where budding young citizens are learning to experience their freedom of expression, where they're learning to be able to respectfully and appropriately put action to their religious faith and express their faith and their religious ideas with their peers. We know for a long time prayer in school has been under attack. I think back to the case long ago of Lee versus Wiseman dealing with a graduation prayer, Santa Fe Independent School District versus Doe, also dealing with prayer at a public school. But now I want to turn to two recent cases. The first one involving two Christian high school football teams that met in the Florida State Finals last year but were not allowed to use the public address system for their traditional pre-game prayer because, according to some, that could be seen or perceived as a government endorsement of religion. An appeal is pending in that case before the Florida High School Athletic Association. Second case, Dean, Coach Joe Kennedy of Bremerton High School in Washington. He's a football coach who was fired for praying on the field after every game. And that case, too, is under appeal to the U.S. District Court in Washington. What are your thoughts on those cases,
Dean? Well, Rita,
Dean?
I want to reinforce what you just said. We cannot be silent when our freedoms are under attack. The two high school teams that you mentioned, they have appealed this.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Kennedy has appealed this to the U.S. District Court in Washington. I saw Joe Kennedy in person last week in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. He got a standing ovation for the stand that he is taking. He has lost his job. He was loved by the players, loved by the parents, but he was fired, and this is the irony of it. He was suspended and later fired, even though the school officials were members of his own church. That's troubling.
And you're making such an important point, Dean, because I can tell you from my experience as a staff attorney with the Rutherford Institute that all too often what happens is at the first hint of conflict, Christians tend to back down. And as a result, we are losing our freedom. Little by little, we are losing our freedom.
And our excuse is, I can't take a stand because I might lose my job. That's why I'm so grateful for Kim Davis. Yes, she risked losing her job. Joe Kennedy the same way. I will not stop going to midfield after the game voluntarily to pray. Yeah. He didn't coerce anybody to do it. Yeah. So that's why we have to take a stand. Now, we talked earlier about the government heavy hand behind all of this. The next area we're going to be talking about is churches and ministries. But I want to talk a little bit about that heavy hand of government that is prompting all of these attacks. Here's a little background. It became very clear that under the Obama administration, religious liberty is taking a back seat to abortion and LGBT issues, and it's been happening increasingly over the past 8 years. Here's an example. Hi Feldblum is a gay activist who was appointed by President Obama as a commissioner to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission in 2010. When she was questioned about Christian employers' rights to hire employees of their choice, she said, "Gays win, Christians lose." And she added that in cases where religious liberty and homosexual rights conflict, she would have a, quote, "a hard time coming up with a case in which religious liberty should win."
Dean, the founding fathers must be turning over in their graves every time they hear someone use that quote. As you know, freedom of religion is our first freedom. It's called and referred to as our first freedom because, in fact, it is the first freedom guaranteed in the Bill of Rights.
Well, Rita, I'm not in my grave yet, and I'm already turning over. This is incredible. But that was in 2010. Now, more recently, just within the last month, get this, the chairman of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, who was appointed by President Obama in 2011, also has said, quote, that religious freedom and religious liberty, those are in quotes, have become code words for discrimination, intolerance, racism, sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia, and Christian supremacy, or any form of intolerance. Therefore, they must yield before anti-discrimination law.
Huh. You know, that's interesting. I guess James Madison didn't get that memo, Dean.
Well, no, but I know who did, because Hillary Clinton used virtually those same words at a fundraiser just a couple weeks ago. Mm. Moving right along.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Well, yes, and we do need to talk about that, because she went even beyond all this to say recently that she would put, and I know our listeners are already aware of this, but it bears repeating, she would put half of Donald Trump's supporters into a basket of deplorables. That's a quote. Right? She said. Racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic. Haven't we just heard those words again? Some of those folks are irredeemable, but they are not America. That's a quote from Hillary Clinton. But sadly, she was talking about more than Donald Trump. She was also talking about the more than 2,000 people from across America. I was one of them who attended a Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C., where Trump had just spoken hours earlier, affirming our Judeo-Christian values and constitutional principles, and who hold many of the beliefs that she was distorting and then attacking it. I say that because it's comical. It reminds me of what my brother once warned me about. He said, "Dean, they will take what you say, distort it beyond recognition, and then attack the distortion."
That's exactly what happened.
Okay. Well, but they also reflect her words that she used last year at a conference where women where she warned that deep-seated cultural codes, religious beliefs, and structural biases have to be changed. At that time, she was talking about access to abortion, but they can just as easily apply to the LGBT agenda today. Wow. Okay, I just have a couple of examples, specific cases. You want to take any of these?
No, you go for it. Just to remind our listeners, we're talking about cases dealing with churches and ministries now.
All right, number one. This happened last year. A lesbian mayor, Anise Parker in Houston, subpoenaed church papers and sermon texts from five Houston pastors for signs of discrimination against gays because they had expressed opposition to her proposed bathroom bill.
Bullying. That's bullying. Government bullying.
And it was only after she came under heavy public pressure that she finally rescinded the order. Now, here's a new one that has just happened. The Iowa Human Rights Commission, Iowa, not Berkeley, not New York City, has just issued new regulations that require churches and church-run daycare centers to comply with the new guidelines that would allow everyone to use restrooms and locker room facilities of their chosen identity. Moreover, they have placed a virtual speech ban on churches that would prevent anyone from saying or doing anything that might make a transgender person feel unwelcome.
Oh, my goodness.
That means you shouldn't preach biblically on this issue.
It's the tyranny of feelings.
There it is. Several churches, fortunately, have already filed lawsuits against these regulations. We'll see what happens. Now, here's another new one. Massachusetts has just announced similar guidelines to that of Iowa, under which churches can be forced to let biological males who identify as women use the women's bathrooms. Rita, I'm sure you have a little bit more to say about all this. But you might add, for example, information about how people bring these charges and how this happens.
Well, we don't have a lot of time to spend on that. But the one thing I want to point out, you know, you mentioned the Iowa Human Rights
Yes.
Commission. And the fact is that most states, if not all of them, have these commissions or departments or boards. They're called human rights commissions or equal employment opportunity commissions, things like that. And the point I want to make is that often these agencies or boards are the first step in reaching this determination about whether discrimination has taken place. Yeah. What I want to underscore here is something we've talked about in past programs. It's the importance of Christians serving in these positions, being on these boards and commissions, praying for the
Yes.
people who are on them, and then standing up, taking notice and paying attention and giving input when these state agencies make their rules and regulations. We
Exactly.
can have input. We need to have input.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, the next category is business. You want to get us started on that?
Sure. We're going to go through a list of cases here dealing with businesses, and these are all relatively recent. The first one involves Baron L. Stutzman, a 70-year-old owner and manager of Arlene's Flowers in Richland, Washington. She was charged by the state attorney general and the ACLU with sexual discrimination, and she was fined because she refused to provide flower arrangements for a same-sex wedding. She appealed the fine, and the case is now under review by the state Supreme Court.
All right, another case very similar. Aaron and Melissa Klein. They were the owners and operators of Sweet Cakes Bakers in Oregon. They were prosecuted by the state and fined $135,000
Wow.
because they would not service a same-sex ceremony. That case, too, is now with the Oregon State of Appeals and will go on to the Supreme Court if necessary.
Next, we have Jonathan and Elaine Huguenin. And they were the owners of Elaine Photography in New Mexico. A court found Elaine guilty of sexual orientation discrimination. According to the judge, business owners and professionals surrender their First Amendment rights when they enter the marketplace. The judge said that the Huguenins, quote, are compelled by law to compromise the very religious beliefs that inspire their lives. It is the price of citizenship. End quote. And the Supreme Court refused to hear an appeal in that case.
Well, another case. Blaine Adamson, Hands-On Originals managing owner of a printing shop in Lexington, Kentucky, sued because he refused to print promotional materials for a gay pride event. Fortunately, a circuit court judge overruled the Kentucky Human Rights Commission and said Adamson could not be compelled to print against his conscience.
Then we have Jim Walder, owner of Timber Creek Bed and Breakfast in Paxton, Illinois, who was fined more than $80,000 by the Illinois Human Rights Commission for refusing to accommodate a civil union ceremony. He stated that he could not be forced to obey government laws that conflict with God's word. Good for him.
And Cynthia and Robert Gifford, owners of Liberty Ridge Farm near Albany, New York, same thing, ordered by the state to pay a $10,000 fine because they refused to hold a same-sex ceremony on their property and were charged for unlawful discrimination based on sexual orientation.
Here's a new case, Dean. Ken and Lynn Storman, owners of Ralph's Thriftway in Olympia, Washington. This has been in the Storman family for 70 years. They were ordered to sell Plan B, abortifacient drugs, themselves. They were not allowed simply to make referrals to other pharmacies that sold it. That case went to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which ruled against them, not surprisingly. And unfortunately, the Supreme Court has refused to hear an appeal in that case. Devastating. So I want to point out here, as we conclude this section, that often the organization behind a lot of these attacks is the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. The American Civil Liberties Union has not been an organization that protects religious freedom, but one that threatens it. Also, there's the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And then, of course, as you pointed out, the Obama administration itself.
Well, Rita, we're running out of time, but we do have one more category, and that's the military. And this is amazing. Chaplain Wes Motter, 19-year Marine Corps veteran, was removed from his position after responding biblically to a request for counseling on the topic of homosexuality. Fortunately, on appeal, he was reinstated, retired with honors, and is now a pastor in Chicago. Alex Rodriguez, a 33-year Air Force veteran, now retired, is often asked to speak at flag-folding ceremonies, where he includes language, God bless this flag, God bless our troops, God bless America. He was commanded not to include that terminology. He was forcibly removed in the middle of the ceremony by military-dressed goons. I don't know how else to describe it. We have more, but we're out of time. Can you bring this all together for us, Rita?
Yeah, well, I can't close without giving a shout out to the organizations that stand up and defend Christians when their religious freedom is attacked. Those are organizations like Alliance Defending Freedom, Liberty Council, First Liberty. They are the heroes in all of this, and I'm so grateful for them. And before we close, Dean, let's point out to our listeners the importance of who is sitting on the Supreme Court. Our next president is likely going to appoint multiple Supreme Court justices, and that is so important to the fate of religious liberty in America. And Dean, that has to bring us to a close. If you would like to listen to this program again or share it with your friends, just go to our website at valleyfamilyforum.org and click on the link to Crossroads at the homepage. We want to thank our business sponsors, Blue Ridge Chimney and Scott Dunaway's Dental Practice. And thanks to all of you for your prayers, your encouragement, and your generous financial support. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by sending a check to P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia 22803. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Rita Dunaway with Dean Welty and Robbie Meadows, our engineer, inviting you to join us again next week at the Crossroads, where faith and culture meet.
Rejoice, 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 let us rejoice,
let us rejoice,
rejoice, rejoice, rejoice,
rejoice,
rejoice,
rejoice,
let us rejoice.